working out of?
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jabe Huard just punched me in the kidney.
On Seattle Sports.
Well, we're going to accuse you of manager.
That really worked that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello!
Good morning, everyone. It is not Brock Huard and Mike Salk today. This is Maura Dooley in with Justin Barnes. I am back from vacation.
Maura Dooley, that voice. It is you in the flesh.
I am back, and now Salk is on vacation. So as you can see, the race really took it out of both of us. We now need to each take a week off from work.
I can tell you, last week, he opened every show with no truth to the rumors that Maura is hiding in shame from it. He really, really dug his heels in.
Of course he did.
On the race.
How's his hamstring doing?
You know, better. He said that he was able to get a round of golf in. So I think that that's the only metric that we use to measure Salk's overall happiness and health. I think, okay. But if there were some people who were asking if there are any bruise photos we could see, and he was unwilling to budge on that.
Did he end up going to the doctor?
He did not. He did not go to a doctor. He didn't. Missed that one.
So he sucked it up. Okay, yep. Good for him.
Yep, he's doing just fine. I think he's going to be just fine. But yes, he's out for a few days. So obviously, I want to hear all about your trip and where you went for people who missed out on it. I mean, another Iowa trip, was it? Or was you actually a
vacation? As everyone likes to say, because I went to Iowa once to visit a friend. They give me heck for that now. But no, I went to the Bahamas.
Shoo.
It was lovely.
Iowa?
Yeah, first day we got there, it was a little windy. And it had just rained, so I was pretty nervous. I was like, no, I just left this one.
Right.
But it was gorgeous after that. And it's some of the prettiest water I've ever seen in my life. I tried the conch fritters and conch salad, which is their local seafood delicacy.
I've never heard of
it. Very clam-like.
Okay.
And then I swam with pigs. So, yeah, we'll probably talk about that a little more later.
Awesome.
It was pretty awesome. And then, today we are going to have the Hyphen, Ryan Roland Smith, in with Brock from 7 to 10. So then they'll be joining us next hour. And, of course, we are going to talk a lot of Mariners today because they are on a roll. Justin, when I left, J.P. Crawford had just been injured.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a little nerve-wracking, wondering how they were going to deal with that. And then it seems like the Mariners were on a roll pretty much the entire time I was gone.
Yeah, there has not been a beat has been missed, because it reminds me of the suspension time when everybody went out and was like, oh no, like this, they've already had such a tough run. Remember that? And then the Winker fight, and it was like, who's going to? And Demo has played fantastic.
He really has.
The Rojas Sirius platoon has worked. And then we see Rojas in left field playing really well. Obviously he's swinging a really hot bat right now. The leadership side of it, of course, you were worried about. But right now, yeah, you're right. They've been beating really good teams and playing really well. And so far, they've been getting through without JP. So I did hear some positive news that he was taking BP and taking ground ball. So maybe he'll be back a little bit sooner than we were predicting. But you never know. Like these updates, and you tweak it worse.
Yeah. Well, especially with an oblique.
Right.
It's easy
And if we're surviving without him now, you feel a little bit better about him, given the real not rushing anything and getting back and getting to full health before you put him back in the lineup.
How was having the Braves and Jared Kelnick in town?
That was interesting. You know, did you go to any of the Diamondback games? Were you around for those?
No, I think I left maybe one of them happened while I was still there. Yeah.
So when Eugenio came up for his first at-bat returning to the stadium, and he had his little presser before the game where he was like, I've been thinking about this since the trade, and he's going to be emotional. He's like, I'm sure I'm going to have some tears in my eyes when I come to the plate. And it was a really cool way that the Mariners handled his return, because he was on deck when that inning started. So instead of playing his little video montage, welcome back, as he approached the plate and probably forcing him to use his timeout, right, because of the way that the pitch clock worked, they played it before the inning break. So everybody kind of got to do a nice welcome back. He was able to salute the crowd and get it out before he approached. The crowd went nuts every time he came up to the plate. It was great. And of course, then he, you know, promptly struck out. I think he went 1-for-12 in the series. Of course, he had a big double at the final game of that series against Gilbert.
Gino.
But I know. But the... It was not the same for Jerry Kelnick when he returned. Obviously, you probably saw some of the clips of his presser as well, where he's like, man, it feels like just yesterday where I was crying in front of you guys in the dugout for kicking the water jug. And he did not really have a great series. I think he had a couple hits. I don't think he struck out the whole time, but the return, there was no video montage for him. There wasn't a big ovation. They did, however, put up on Mariner Vision when he went out into left field for the first game, like a welcome back.
Okay.
And he saw it like at the very last second and kind of did a clap and a wave to some people out in left field, but nothing that even scratched the surface of what it was like for Eugenio. And then, yeah, he had an opportunity a couple different times to really kind of, I don't want to say to bite back or to fight back or to really, you know, show why. And he is and was such a highly talented prospect.
But he made some comments that make it seem like he's a little jaded. So, you know, he probably wanted that opportunity.
Yep. And then the series ended with him striking out and the Mariners winning the series. So that was, it was nice. And it was weird to see him in a number 24 jersey. I thought that was kind of a strange thing.
That is weird.
Goodness. But,
well, you know, back when the Mariners season first started and we were all a little stressed out because, you know, it was a rough start. I think I predicted to you guys that they, you know, might win some of the easier games ahead of them. And then Jared Kelnick was going to come into town and hit a bunch of home runs and they'd lose to the Braves. And so I'm really glad that I was wrong about that. I know we were getting some text early on when the Mariners offense was really struggling, you know, letting us know what Kelnick was doing. And some people kind of waxing poetic about maybe we shouldn't have gotten rid of him. So
same in Eugenio, and he obviously hasn't, you know, kept the same hot streak, but Teoscar has done okay. You're right. There was some of that chirping has quieted down from the
And it's not that we're not still looking for a little more consistency from the Mariners offense, but some of that, the comparisons have quieted down to where it's not so much of a leaps and bounds that those guys are ahead by.
Yeah, and won six straight series against a lot of really good baseball.
Yeah, and speaking of, this weekend against the Astros, and even though they are not what the Astros used to be, still a tough team to play, and it was really great to see the Mariners keep rolling like that. We were talking a little bit in our email last night about Logan Gilbert.
It's absurd.
I mean, just it seems like from day one this season has just been locked in, and he continued his dominance with 8 scoreless innings on Saturday, giving up just 4 hits and striking out 6. According to Mariners PR, his 50 strikeouts are tied for the American League lead, and his 1.69 ERA is 4th. And Adam Jude posted that he is 32-0 when the Mariners provide him with at least 3 runs of support in his career.
Mm-hmm.
That's,
like,
Walter is insane. And it's so cool to see him having this possible Cy Young type year because he's just also, like, one of the nicest guys that we talk to. He's so easy to root for.
Mm-hmm. He's one of the hardest workers. He's one of the more interesting and compelling characters on the entire team, which you wouldn't know unless you get that experience with him, like we do at spring training. His last 5 starts, by the way, 35 innings, 4 earned runs, 35 strikeouts with a 1.02 ERA. Absolute dominance. And we should say happy belated birthday to Gilbert as well. I think yesterday was his birthday. That was a freak show outing. I mean, you're right. That's the kind of outing you have in a campaign for a Cy Young year. And
he wanted to stay out there.
Yeah.
Post game.
Do we have the cut of him saying any of that?
I do have it. Here we go.
Okay.
When he's waiting on the top step, it's not really a good sign, but I did tell him one more and he said no. So he shut it down pretty quick.
I was at a bachelor party this weekend out in the in Allen, Washington. It was like a golf bachelor party for my buddy Dunk. And we were watching the game, of course, after we got home back from the golf course, and we didn't have any of the sound on for it. So I missed everything that could have. And that was all I wanted to do was listen to Gilbert's press conference. But I'm like, okay, no, you're not at work. Like, just relax. You're going to hear
Take
this.
The weekend
you're going to hear
off.
This next weekend. Yeah. He was incredible. I mean, it was a really, and especially after the night before where you needed that, like when the Mariners just had their own little meltdown, you had to have it. And
it's easy because of the last 2 games to forget that Friday wasn't so great.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, save the bullpen. I just love Gilbert.
Exactly. And then it is cool to see that he credits, you know, part of his success to his relationship with Cal Raleigh.
need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
The Mariners won 5-4 Sunday with a comeback victory. Luke Raley hit his first home run of the season. Luis Urias went 3-for-4 with a walk and an RBI. And Cal Raleigh hit his 8th home run of the season to give the Mariners a one-run lead in the top of the 9th.
I think he sees what's working.
Oops, that's on it.
Now the stretch and the 0-2 pitch. On the way to Cal. Swing and a well-hit ball deep to left field. Going and going and goodbye, baseball! In and out of the Crawford boxes. And straight away left. That was a comet. Holy smokes, number 8 on the year for Cal Raleigh. His second in as many days here in Houston. And the Mariners grab the lead 5-4 over the Astros.
That was a comet. I love that in the space city of Houston. That's well done, Riz.
Nice job, Rick. Andres Munoz got the final 4 outs to seal the Mariners' 6th straight series win. And afterwards, Scott Servais wanted to give a little credit to his third base duo.
And, you know, Luis Urias doesn't get enough credit. He has been a very productive everyday player in the big leagues. And we want to make sure he stays sharp. And you're going to give him games against right-handed pitching. But he played good defense today. And you can't say enough about the job Rojas has done. With J.P. Crawford out at the top of our lineup, what he has done has been phenomenal. I talk about it all the time. His baseball IQ, understanding what the situation calls for, knowing what he's looking for. He's a really good base runner. He handled left field, no problems at all. He's just a good baseball player. And you can't have enough of those guys.
That position has turned out to be much stronger than people anticipated. That's probably putting it lightly. Bryce Miller went 6 innings, giving up 6 hits, 4 earned runs, 1 walk, and striking out 3. He spoke after the game about just needing to clean up the sweepers, which were what he said those 2 home run pitches were. And but he thinks he can work on that and get it all cleaned up.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
In case you missed it, we found out Friday that George Kirby has been dealing with some discomfort in his knee in recent weeks. When he was pulled before the 7th inning of that great outing, he said post-game, though, that it's not that concerning.
Yeah, it's kind of bugging me for the last couple weeks, and I'm pitching through it. You know, obviously, I'd like to go back out there, but, you know, we decided probably the best idea to, you know, end it there and give it to the bullpen, but yeah.
It sounds like it's something you're not terribly concerned about.
No, not at all. I've been able to pitch through it and, you know, been getting good treatment on it or whatever. Today was just a little different, but I felt really good out there, so.
It started concerning and ended not as concerning as I felt it was going to be. Brian Wu, though, if you haven't noticed it, if you haven't been following this along on X in the post, he continues to have some pretty strong progress in his rehab outings at Tacoma. He pitched 5 on Saturday, gave up 3 hits, no runs, no walks, struck out 6 on 66 pitches, throwing a lot of strikes. Servais said that he should be able to throw 80 to 85 in his next outing and then see where things fall for him to return if that goes well.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
The Seahawks held rookie minicamp over the weekend and they also got underway with first-round pick Byron Murphy freshly signed to a 4-year, $16 million fully guaranteed contract. Mike McDonald spoke about what he saw from the rookie this weekend.
Tough to really truly evaluate because of the tempo, but just overall good start. You know, we're not going to crown him right now, and he's the next best defensive tackle of all time. But I mean, we're really excited about it. And shows all the bend and the strength at the point of attack and acceleration. Need to get in a little bit better shape, you know, so he can get through a whole practice and fly around like we expect him to. But he understands that, just like the rest of these guys. It's so hard to stay in this elite shape the way the calendar's set up. So he'll get there, but we'll be pushing him in the meantime.
Justin, I felt like you could immediately feel the difference from a Pete Carroll press conference. Like it wasn't full Belichick there. He was saying it's hard to stay in elite shape with everything he has going on, but like we need him to get better. And, you know, just saying we're not going to crown him yet. It's definitely just a different approach. You heard a lot of the guys, when they used to describe Pete Carroll, it was always like, oh, he's so fun, talking about how much energy he has. And they were saying things like, he's demanding. He expects excellence.
Totally.
But they all said they're very excited to be pushed like that. So it'll be interesting to see these different dynamics play out. But you can already you can already point to some of the differences.
Not as vague speaking in his way of approaching things.
No, yeah. Very, I think one of them actually said very straightforward. And here was Tyrese McKnight talking about some of the drills that they did.
I mean, for sure, he wanted us to be head-on, like, organized from, like, rep one, step one. So I'm pretty sure we did, like, one thing, like, six times in a row because it wasn't breaking out correctly. So I know he respect excellence. And I just know that he will respect that for every day moving forward.
Sorry, I combined McDonald and Knight there. Tyrese Knight. I said McKnight.
Yes. Sorry, I got it.
But yeah, it definitely sounds like practices are going to be a little different. Apparently, yes. There was still music.
Very curious about how that's going to be.
Yeah, there was still music, but McDonald said that they need to figure out the volume and how often they're going to have it and make sure that it's still very much a learning atmosphere. Meanwhile, UW held their spring game on Friday with an attendance number of 18,448. The purple team defeated the gold team 24-23. Our Huskies insider Christian Capel reported that there were elements of the game that felt real, but they also had a little fun. Apparently, the gold team first got on the board when, during a timeout, UW women's soccer coach Nicole Van Dyke made a 25-yard field goal. would have been the biggest applause if it wasn't for Michael Penix arriving on the sidelines.
Oh, yeah.
That got the biggest applause. He also said quarterback Will Rogers went 14 of 25 for 154 yards, one touchdown and one interception. And wide receiver Denzel Boston caught seven passes for 127 yards, and one of them was a 28-yard touchdown from Rogers. Here was Coach Jed Fish on accomplishing the goal that they set out to with the game.
Good to see everybody. Fun atmosphere. What we're looking for in the game, to stay healthy, which we did. Be able to, play hour and a half of football, be able to tackle, make it a game. I think that's why we do it. So it was fun to compete. Went all the way down to the end. Got a 24-23 victory, which was pretty awesome. Was able to incorporate some things along the way, which was fun. But most important thing for me was the guys having fun, guys smiling, guys enjoying it, guys understanding that we get to do this, and it's a privilege.
How about the videos of Jed Fish going down Greek Row and door-to-door delivering pizzas to all the Frat sorority house?
He said he wants a bigger turnout last year and that they need to make it more of a party atmosphere, so he's getting a head start on that.
Yeah, pizza's a good way to do it.
I mean, they did have a ton of NFL players in for this, too. So, I mean, he made it clear in his first press conference that he wants these guys to know that NFL is the goal that he has for a lot of them.
Yeah, Pac-12 puts out a lot in the NFL.
They do. UW had a pretty good draft for that. So we will hear more about that from Brock when he joins us at 7, along with Ryan Roland-Smith. Coming up next, that is everything you need to know. Coming up next, we are going to revisit what John Schneider and Mike McDonald had to say last week, because we are going to do a pretty baseball-heavy show today. So let's dig into a little football and hear what they had to say after the draft. You're listening to the Brock and Salk Show on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
This is Brock and Salk.
Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Brock and Salk's Rewind is presented by Toyota of Kirkland.
It's the finale, ladies and gentlemen. The John Schneider Show's here live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center with Wyman and Bob. We've got John here with us, and he brought us a friend today. He brought a guy I think most people are aware of right now. Head coach Mike McDonald is here with us. Can we get...
Should I turn this up? Wasn't sure.
There we go. There we
initially.
Go. There we go. We're all good. Good to see you guys.
Yeah, cool. Thanks. To be here.
Good to see you.
Yeah,
I know you're so sad.
What were you pointing to there? You were pointing to this vicinity,
the
right? This region right
the
here.
The t-shirt fits nicely, except right around the belly portion. It's a little too tight. I think I got it out of Jack's drawer this morning.
A little snug,
yeah,
is it?
A little snug.
You didn't realize it until you sat down
in the
chair.
Yeah, until I sat down in the chair. Yeah.
I look up, and he's giving you this region right here.
It's wedged right in the middle.
That's where the donuts get stuck, right?
You guys are so sad.
The what?
It's our last show. It's
very sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
We love talking to you.
Yeah.
You love talking to us.
I do.
Yeah.
Especially off air.
Yeah. that's where the good
off
stuff
is. Off air is
the good stuff.
Yeah.
Should we get
but
to
thanks
the draft?
For coming, Mike.
Dave's getting anxious here.
Come on. Should we only have so much time here? Come on now.
Should we say football things?
Yeah. Tell us about how you guys collaborated during the draft. You know, what was the input and things like that? How different was the process for you, Mike, as far as being with a GM and all that stuff? What was it like with you two?
You want to go first?
We didn't collaborate.
Okay.
We did exactly what we wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that was awesome. I mean, No, it was great. But just the fact that I told you guys that they were putting their processes in and as much time as they spent, the coaches spent, it was outstanding. And the job they did on the Zooms was great. So, and then it helped the scouts and all the personnel people learn new coaches as well.
Yeah.
And then Mike was in our meetings enough early on, especially the first round of meetings we had, to get some great perspective on what he was looking for at specific positions.
How different was it for you, Coach, just being – you're the guy now. You're the head coach. I mean, you've been in there before as a coordinator, and I'm sure there was a process of getting your opinion and evaluation on different players, but you were looking maybe specifically at defense.
Yeah.
Now that you're overseeing the entire operation, how different was this for you?
Well, I mean, it's a work in progress since the day you walk in the door of where we're at, where we want to go. It's a lot of conversation between John and I and really everybody else on the building of who we have and, you know, the direction we want to take it and then what's out there. So it's just kind of this ongoing evolution of the roster building and the draft process. And to answer your question, we just got started a little bit later than you normally would, you know, as a coaching staff. So, but it was awesome, man. Getting used to a different process, and understanding it, and having trust in the people that have been here for such a long time. It was awesome to understand how it works. You know, so it's eyes open, and you're just listening. It's doing a lot of listening about what guys are saying about guys, and see how we can get aligned and create consensus. And I think that's where we ended up.
Such a cool day because you have no idea what's going to happen. And what happened for you guys? You probably wanted a defensive player. And 14 offensive players get picked, right? I mean, that's incredible. You must have just been licking your chops right then. Was that kind of one of the stranger things that you've seen happen in a draft, John?
Yeah, we haven't talked since the draft. That's right.
No.
Yeah, sorry. Well, no, I'm not sorry that we didn't talk since the draft. I thought we talked about this already. No, I mean, just the fact that I was writing about this the other night, and I was telling Mike that it was way hairier than you remember at the time, because we had a couple guys that, you know, we had several people that we just knew weren't going to be there. We were prepared for them to be there if they came. But, yeah, I mean, we really, you know, we're, you know, for one reason or another, I personally think it's, like, divine that you're focused on one individual, and he felt like the guy all the time. You know, a couple offensive players just didn't make it there, and, you know, we weren't in a position to go get somebody either. But I would say that if we would have had that ammunition to do that, that was somebody that everybody had the consensus, you know, we had a couple guys that we would, you know, he was obviously the primary guy on defense to go get. Mm-hmm. But we forgot, like, you know, there was a period in there that felt like, you know, maybe it was, I don't know, it was probably like an hour and a half it was probably an hour and a half. But it felt like it just went by so fast. But it was like, okay, it happened. And then all of a sudden we started getting texts that, you know, Indy was picking UCLA. So,
yeah.
And then Byron Murphy falls to you guys at 16. Mm-hmm. Just again, just talking about your new role, before your focus was defense. You're worried about your players and your scheme and the whole thing. And now you're evaluating offensive players. Are you leaning? I mean, not that you don't know football and offensive players, but are you deferring to your coaches more? How does the evaluation of offensive players happen for you now, considering your sole focus prior to this was on defense?
There's definitely a curve, you know, evaluating offensive guys. You just haven't done it. So, yeah, you're absolutely leaning on offensive line, you know, Huff and Grubb and all those guys, Nuge, and then all of our scouts, I think, you know. And you're listening to how they're describing them and things that are important to you, like principle-wise. Of course, we're going to have an idea there. And then you kind of feel how you're aligned, and then, okay, that guy, you know, okay, I kind of saw the same thing. That makes sense. And it's just, and then, you know, that curve will shorten, you know, over the years and stuff, and that's a process I look forward to, you know, trying to build the best team we possibly can, all three phases. And, you know, next year I'll get up, you know, get started on a lot earlier and be able to be in the process from the get-go, which I'm looking forward to.
So, Mike, you know, you're kind of a linebacker aficionado, right? That's kind of your position. What's it mean to your defense to have – so you got Big Cat that you signed, and you got – that guy's hard to move. I mean, he's hard to double-team, and then you got another guy who same thing, Byron Murphy. I mean, how important is that to your linebackers and just your defense in general to have those two pieces?
Yeah, well, I think it's more than two pieces. I'm really excited about our front, you know, especially our D-line. I mean, guys like Jay Reed, just a stalwart in there, being a leader for the team. You know, third down pass rush, Leo. Hank was a great acquisition, you know, to man the A-gap for us. And Draymond, I feel like he's going to have a great year. I think we have a cool role for him. And then you add a guy like Murph to the whole equation. I mean, it's going to be fun to see how that works out, you know, rep-wise and how we can move him. But one thing that's really neat about who we have and how we're structured is there's, like, position flexibility, where that might not have been the case in rosters that I've, you know, worked with in the past. So it's going to be a fun process, man, of seeing who works well with who and how we call the games and maybe some different personnel groups that you haven't seen from us in the past. And so, you know, it's time to experiment and see who's good at what and see how it clicks. So it's going to be really fun.
Well, one of the things we've talked about is it's been the same two guys, John and Pete, for 14 years. You kind of know what to expect. You know what the philosophies are. And now everything's new. We don't, you know, we could look at Baltimore and go, well, that's what they did on defense.
Sure.
But how much of that applies to what's going on here? Was that based on the personnel you had there, or was that based on this is my scheme and I plug in players that fit my scheme? Is that fair to say out here, this is the scheme I bring here, or I'm going to adjust the scheme based on the personnel I have?
Yeah, I think you guys would be surprised about how much, like, alignment from the get-go of how we see the game. And not just John, but, like, everybody up here and then all of our coaches. And a lot of it has the way that we've played here in Seattle for years, you know, especially when we were, you know, cooking, going to Super Bowls and stuff. So that's a lot of carryover, you know, what we're going to value. And so that was a pretty seamless transition. And then I think just philosophically speaking, I think good coaches will take great players and figure out how to use them. You know, those things you're going to stress about, some size criteria and things like that. But play demeanor and style and all that kind of stuff, I mean, that was less of a transition than one might think.
I don't remember a draft where he heard more about how guys talking about, I'm a dog. And I love what Carl Scott said, because he was like, hey, I got to see it. I don't need to hear it, or something on the call. Like, it was kind of a hard-ass response by Kay Scott, which I loved.
Oh, yeah. He's a hard-ass. So.
Yeah. No, I love Carl, man. Yeah, he's awesome. One of my favorites. But it just seemed like more often than in past drafts, I guess, question for both of you, but it just seemed like you're looking for the grinders and the guys that just love, eat, breathe, sleep football. And it seemed like a lot of those guys sort of came out in your draft.
We're always looking for that. I mean, it's just sometimes it happens, you know, where you're picking a little bit more talent than maybe that dog you're talking about.
Mm.
But, we're always looking for that, you know, and it's kind of a term right now, too, you know, because a dog.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. you would
you got to earn that.
You would know that if you're really hip, Dave, like.
Like John is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you guys pay any attention to? Post-draft commentary, everybody loves to give out the grades. But this team won, this team lost, this team hit it out of the park. You guys pay any attention to the reviews of your draft at all?
I mean, I like, you'd be lying to say you ignore everything.
Yeah,
but
right.
What I told our guys was, like, we're it's under our control of what happens, you know, to the development of our guys. Like, we kind of write the story with that.
Right.
With how we build our team and how we train our guys, so.
So you're saying you don't care what Mel Kiper thinks?
It's kind of a mute point. But yeah, of course you're going to see stuff, absolutely.
Yeah, they spend so much time on it now. They used to be like, okay, well, how does, you know, Zimmerman have the first round?
Yeah.
Like a week and a half before the draft in Sports Illustrated, you know? Now it's like you can have 15 mock drafts right up to the mock draft, and or right up to the draft, you know, and then they can do it all the way through the draft, and then so... Now you have the gambling aspect, too, so people are saying, you know, like, people are betting on where a player's going to go and stuff, too, so there's, I don't know if the experts are gambling on it or not, but, you know what I mean? But they're like, you know, they're like, hey, well, this guy should have gone here, this guy should have gone there, he's supposed to go here, he's about to go, it doesn't matter, as long as it's your player, your person, your competitor for your team, and that's it.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of those guys,
like it when they're like, they give like you, that was a bad pick. You're like, that's awesome.
Well, and that's kind of
awesome.
That's kind of why I asked, because across the board, you guys got great grades, but they, anybody that had a criticism, it was about the two guys in the fourth round, to be honest.
Sure.
Those were the two guys people go, they could have gotten those guys later. They felt like that was their reach. That seemed to be the commonality between all the post-draft
critics. He always grades us down because he gave us an F for when we drafted. The 2012 draft is when we took Russell Wilson and Bobby and
was that a good draft?
And all those guys.
That didn't work out at all.
They got a D.
Bruce Irvin, he gave us an F. He's like, what are they doing? You know. And so so now, I think for him, maybe a B's really an A.
Yeah.
So, it could be a sliding scale, if you will.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, tell us about those guys. Tyrese Knight, what you guys saw on him, guy from UTEP. Looked like he had good instincts as far as reading. I'll be a scout. His eyes were really good.
No, it's not like you're sitting in the room with him.
Yeah, no, but that's kind of what
he
it looked like.
He loves this stuff. He's so into it.
Yeah, Yeah, honestly, it sounds like you're in the room with us. Those are the things that we saw. Hmm. And, you have to be able to play linebacker. In order to do that, you have to make tackles. So guys that don't make plays and get guys on the ground, what are we doing? They're just staring, standing around staring at each other. We need guys to go be active and go make plays and make tackles and see things. And it felt like the game was a little bit slow for them, which is what you want.
Yeah.
And, nobody's doing all the things in college. They're all doing, it's all specific to the schemes, and it's hard to grade somebody harshly based off of what they've been asked to do. And then you see them translate at the Senior Bowl, and now it's, everybody's a projection to a certain degree, right? So, we're confident that he's going to pick it up fast and compete to play.
We've talked about this before, John, some of the sites that track salary cap, whether it's Over the Cap or SpoTrack or any of those. Mm-hmm. I don't know how accurate they are or aren't, but they have the Seahawks fairly close right now. Are you guys in a situation where you...
We are fairly close, yeah.
Yeah, you still have to sign all your draft picks and everything. So
we budgeted for that, but yeah, we're pretty tight.
Are moves going to have to be made or readjustments?
There's some of the automatic stuff, that can happen where you can create cap space, like we did with Diggsy and Jamal and that sort of stuff last year. We may have a couple of those we utilize to create some more room, but we're budgeted to be able to keep trying to, work our team through the trade deadline, depending on, what other guys, salary cap numbers are. We're not done. We're not done. We try to budget all the way through.
How about some of the free agents that you guys signed? We've had some good ones around here. Jermaine Kearse, Doug Baldwin, trying to think who else. There's been a few guys that you signed. Was Puna?
Was
he a free agent?
Puna was, yeah.
Yeah, so that was a lot of work. You got, 15 guys? And a lot of work this weekend, right, for the rookie to be able to get enough guys in here and to run drills and stuff like that. But anybody stand out to you that as far as a free agent that you signed that you're excited about?
Just excited about the whole group this weekend. Mike was open to having they did in Baltimore, having a whole group of people, a bunch of tryout people too, to compare to the people that were signed as rookie free agents. And there's a number of guys that we signed right away that so for some guys the path to the roster is more clear, and then there's some guys that just make it more clear for you based on their performance. It's basically what Bobo did last year. I don't know how you feel about it.
Yeah, we take a lot of pride in the UDFA process. Those are our guys. Our challenge is to develop them and coach them just like we would the first few guys on the roster. So that's our mentality. We had a meeting this week to say, hey, we're coaching everybody all the time. So that's our philosophy. And players are allowed to get better. And sometimes it doesn't matter where you find them. I've had a lot of experiences where tryout guys have made the roster and made an impact. And doesn't matter where you start, man. It's just about coming in and being productive and being your best self, and we'll coach you up. And there's a lot of opportunity out there.
What do they go through? What do the rookies go through in this camp?
What
is it? A lot of drills? Is it intensive? Or is it more about learning? Here's our terminology or our philosophy.
Yeah, it's an intro to the philosophy and who we are culture wise. Good opportunity for them to be by themselves, without the vets, to kind of hear it for the first time. Scheme wise, we'll keep it pretty simple, just to let them go out there and try to go play. But we're going to have, proper practices and go out there and get some good work in, do it the right way and stay off the ground and stuff. But that's a little bit of a learning curve, learning how to practice like a pro and things like that. But it's a great opportunity for them to do that before, the vets are here and we're doing it for real in OTA. So it'll be a lot of fun.
Mike, we talked to one of your, I can't remember if it was a coach or somebody, that your first job as a coach was coaching freshman football.
Yeah, and you Xavier were, Smith, I know. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you were 9-0 and had 7 shutouts. I mean,
so that's the
wow,
expectation
that was a,
here now.
That was a, yeah, that number one.
They're not allowed to score.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
But no, awesome. I was like, is that when it like clicked for you, or you know, were you like, okay, I'm meant to be a coach?
Oh man, that was an awesome experience. You fell in love with coaching during that time, you know, just like I was saying, to see someone go from point A to point B from one day to another, like that was like, okay, this is awesome. You know, like this is really cool, and see people, you know, develop as people, you know, in high school, such a formative time, especially in that area. And to feel like your investment, you know, you've got some return on it, just in your relationships. And that's when it hit me, you know. I mean, the shutouts were cool, you know, that was awesome. But I mean, we were playing like wing tee defense, you know. I couldn't tell you where cover three was. We were just, you know, tight go. And, you know, that was a couple of our calls there. So head slant field was a big one.
I agree with you. Shutouts are awesome.
Yeah,
shutouts are good. Everybody's on board with that. Hey, have you gotten, I know it's been a short amount of time, but have you gotten used to how much more weight your words carry and everything is now the head coach? You're doing the press conferences. Anything you say is going to be picked apart. And
yeah.
Coach McDonald said this. What did he mean by that? Or, I mean, just anything you say. The thing we talked, the picture gate, as John
picture
called
gate.
It. That became such a huge thing. And I'm sure you were probably sitting there going, wait, what?
Yeah.
What? And everybody's talking about it, writing about it. Is that
new,
that feeling of being?
Yeah, of course it's new. It's of course. And when you're getting ready for the process, you're getting, you know, there's a lot of advice that you're asking folks. And some of the most sage advice that I got was, hey, every interaction you're going to have throughout the building is probably going to be the most meaningful interaction for like that person. You know, like they'll, you know, if it's an intern or whatever, they're going to say, they're going to go back to their wife or whatever and say, hey, like, how, oh, I hung out with the head coach for a while today. Like,
yeah.
You know, that's a big, you know, so you want to, absolutely. You want to be intentional with your words and make sure that, you know, you're being uplifting and empowering and, you know, and reinforcing the values that you know, that you're saying. So you're backing on, you know, you're walking the walk and talking the talk at the same time. So, absolutely. It's a learning experience. And just like everybody else in our staff, I mean, every day goes by, you learn a little bit more. And, I think you can feel that throughout our staff too, which is exciting. Yeah. You can see the growth.
So this is a special draft for you, John, just, you know, first time it's pretty much, you know, you got final word. And did it feel differently for you, or was it just the same process that you do every single time?
It was really the same process all the way through. It really was. Mike just came in later.
Yeah.
You know, he just came in later to the process. I know I've been asked that a ton, and it didn't feel like this is who we're taking. You'll be damned if you didn't know this guy. You know what I mean?
All of a sudden, you're a dictator.
You know, yeah, like, no, we've never, you know, Elson and I have many leather bound books in my office, but we haven't,
you know.
And I've told you guys a million times, like, it was never, I mean, like that. That's not how you win in this league. Like, you have to be, like, together and doing. I mean, there's a lot of teams now that are hiring, like, a head coach, a general manager, and like a president of football operations or whatever. Like there's no one person can do this job.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, when 2010, Pete recognized that he just wanted to have input into who his partner was going to be.
Yeah. It looks like Mike has the same sense of humor as you. So that's good. You guys get along.
Guy too.
He laughs at your jokes.
Are you getting all the movie references? Do you know where
I don't get his?
Yeah. No, Nolan is really the guy in the office that, like, he is my most formidable movie quote opponent.
Okay.
From like 1995 to like 2001.
So pre-95, you're going to look at him with a blank look and go. Hey,
well, I'm saying him. So oh. John's looking at me like that. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Like, what? I don't know what you're talking about. And then the two of them will be laughing.
John's feeling left
out. And I'll be like, Trent, did you get that? No.
Yeah, Nolan's got some good ones. They'll come out there. It's impressive.
Yeah.
So overall, with the draft, did it go kind of how you thought it would? I mean, every year you probably have a sense of, well, we think this team will go this direction, this one will go this direction. You get calls and things like that for making moves. Did it, in the end, when you look back on it, do you feel like that was about the way it went, or no? I thought
very much so. Honestly, we knew we had groupings throughout the board, and we knew where we wanted it. Like we had touch points, and we got to them. And you know, we had a couple of times where we were going to move around, we didn't. We were going to move up, we didn't. You know, 16, we stayed, waited. Yeah, it wasn't like a, it wasn't, it didn't feel like a draft to be, like trying to be like, you know, the smartest guy in the room and trying to be moving all over the place.
Right.
You know, it felt like a draft, like, hey, we have buy-in with a new staff on these areas. Let's hit these areas and then grow from here.
Yeah, so it's interesting, you know, putting together that whole staff and everything, and everybody's pretty much new here and fresh look and everything. And so what's been like the biggest difference for you, Mike, as far as, you know, the difference between being in Baltimore and being here in Seattle? Is there anything like culturally or as far as like the facility or anything that really stands out to you?
Yeah, well, I mean, you're on the opposite coast. You're in a totally new environment. I mean, it's there's a lot that's different. And I think just philosophically speaking, you don't want to come in like guns blazing, acting like you got all the answers. I mean, we've done a lot of really sweet things here for a long time. So how do you merge like the visions of people? And that takes a lot of listening and figuring it out. And you're not just going to like cut it once and be like, all right, here we go. This is what we're doing. You know, so it's. And there's so many different aspects of our organization and like arms of it and tentacles and everywhere. So I think we're still working through that. You know, I think we've made a lot of progress, but yeah, it's going to be, you know, hopefully we're working on it for years and years and years, and you just keep evolving over and over and over. So that's been the philosophy.
Hey, seriously, anytime you guys want to come on, the door's open. Great to meet you, Coach.
Thanks, guys.
Very cool to talk to you. John, it's been fun.
All right. We've had a lot of fun. Been fun again. I appreciate you guys.
Very cool. Thanks. That's John Schneider. That's Mike McDonald, the head coach and the GM, president of football operations.
All right, there. We wanted to revisit a little bit of Wyman and Bob doing a great interview there with John Schneider and Mike McDonald after the draft last week, because we are going to be having a very baseball-heavy show today with Ryan Roland-Smith and with Brock Heward coming up next. But we will have a little football in there for you at 7:45 with Brock Heward's Blue 88. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Brock and Salk Show on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.